Beyond the familiar center-left economic critique, the argument that creditors and lenders by nature dislike rapid growth and inflation, preferring lesser economic momentum, 2.5 to 3%, and the deflationary influence of cheap imports and a third world labor pool, broaden concern attached to the perception of a credit bubble. If housing prices weren't the second bubble in the Greenspan sequence, debt was. If there's a bubble, it's in this four-letter word. Debt, Merrill Lynch chief North American economist David Rosenberg had observed earlier. The U.S. economy is just awash in it. Other worriers ventured kindred descriptions. The credit bubble, the mortgage finance bubble, the hedge fund bubble, and the systemic liquidity money supply bubble. The underlying premises were similar. Debt and credit had gotten out of control, even as the rest of the economy sometimes seemed to flirt with deflation. Data from the 2000 census documenting the ascent of financial services became available in 2001, but received little initial public attention in a nation shell-shocked by the events of September 11th. The ominous linkage between the escalation of private and public U.S. debt and the expansion of the financial services industry was generally ignored, despite its imminent relevance when debt and home refinancing became such a conspicuous Washington priority. Investment strategists could be outspoken with important clients, but few officeholders held a similar 2004 dialogue with voters. In the words of Ray Dalio of Bridgewater Associates, a large Connecticut money management firm, "The money that's made from manufacturing stuff is a pittance in comparison to the amount of money made from shuffling money around. 44% of all corporate profits in the U.S. come from the financial sector, compared with only 10% from the manufacturing sector." I have seen no rebuttals. The numbers were hardly shocking. Public finance is one of the world economy's oldest profit centers. Research by the Wall Street Journal for a millennial retrospect on great wealth holders revealed public finance, the opportunity to handle the taxes, borrowings, and debts of kings, popes, and conquered provinces, as a major source of great fortunes since late medieval times. Notables included Jacques Coeur, financial advisor to 15th-century French kings, and the Peruzzi, Medici, and Fugger families, whose relations to power centered on popes. Three of the great British and French fortunes of the early 19th century were amassed by loan makers to governments. Nathan and James Rothschild and Gabriel Julien Ouvrard, the French wartime speculator and paymaster for Napoleon. Even in the early American Republic, four men counted among the richest, Robert Morris, William Bingham, Stephen Girard, and John Jacob Astor, owed significant portions of their wealth to investment or speculation in state and federal bonds and securities of the Bank of the United States. Accounts of late 19th century public finance and wealth echo with names such as Jay Cook, J.P. Morgan, and George F. Baker of New York's First National Bank. Today, despite the prominence of money men such as Warren Buffett and George Soros, the importance of the financial services industry rests less on glamorous individuals and more on a perverse interplay of magnitude and jeopardy. The magnitude lies in how finance has penetrated every nook and cranny of the U.S. economy, as well as the digitized world of cyberspace. From corner ATM machines and an average of 8 credit cards per household to a $15 trillion stock market, $40 trillion of total credit market debt, and a global total of derivative positions estimated at $270 trillion, the reach of finance is awesome. And as beyond our ken, as awed New Yorkers found the first electric dynamos in the 1880s. If history teaches us anything, it's that this so-called cutting-edge finance is an accident waiting to happen, despite claims by the so-called new macroeconomists that derivatives are tame and benign and that national debt and deficits are manageable within a new global savings pool in which national boundaries no longer matter so much. Even Alan Greenspan occasionally owned to uncertainty about where speculators and new credit instruments, hedge funds and derivatives in particular, might be taking the country. Throughout 2004 and 2005, investment strategists and economists speculated that Greenspan was nervous about these markets. Some even interpreted his May 2005 speech, citing the growing risk to banks and investors of a derivatives-driven liquidity crisis, as a thinly veiled message to sell. Their practical fear, that a rout in the bond market could follow any panicky hedge fund selling of collateral debt obligations, CDOs, mirrored uneasiness on the edge of the credit bubble.